scale, you kind of find the cracks in the system. One big one that I see a lot is people defaulting to giving advice and teaching the people that they work with and maybe explaining to them how they could work on their project or how they can meet a deadline. That's what I'm going to call like mentoring skills. People defaulting to mentoring skills over defaulting to coaching skills and sponsoring skills.
Welcome to Scaling Software Teams, a weekly podcast to help software leaders navigate fast growth without losing the magic that made that growth possible. I'm your host, Wes Winham. Today, we're joined by Lara Hogan. Lara Hogan is the co-founder of Wherewithal. Lara is the former VP of engineering at Kickstarter, and she's also the former engineering director at Etsy. Lara has also authored two books, Resilient Management and Demystifying Public Speaking. In this episode, Lara does what she does best, management coaching. She provides me with live one-on-one coaching on my management style. Together, we use her biceps framework to help me process resistance patterns I see in my daily work. Right now, we're in a challenging period for engineering leaders. That's why I'm dedicating time to answer questions about engineering leadership. If you have questions about building and managing a remote team, email me at wes@woventeams.com and I'll help you out. Again, that's wes@woventeams.com so I can answer any questions you have about growing and managing a remote team. And now, here's my conversation with Lara Hogan. Lara, thank you so much for joining us today on Scaling Software Teams.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you wrote a book called Resilient Management. Can you tell us a little bit about why you wrote that book and who is it for?
I wrote this book over a number of years after I left full-time work and became self-employed, started my own coaching and training business. There were just some common themes that came up in all of my coaching and advising conversations, and that was the genesis of the book. I wanted to be able to answer in one place all of the things I think a new manager, regardless of discipline, might be interested in knowing. So really, it's for new managers primarily, but frankly, I've heard from a lot of experienced managers too that they still get a bunch out of the book as well, which makes me really happy.
So I think a decent number of our listeners are folks that are, they've maybe been managers for a while, but now they're managing a lot more people. What are some common traps you see those kind of experienced managers, but their scale has increased?
It's funny to me how some of the themes from, you know, when we first dip our toe into management persist unless we really give it some thought. So especially as you scale, you kind of find the cracks in the system. One big one that I see a lot is people defaulting to giving advice and teaching the people that they work with and maybe explaining to them how they could work on their project or how they can meet a deadline. That's what I'm going to call like mentoring skills. People defaulting to mentoring skills over defaulting to coaching skills and sponsoring skills. So coaching skills are all about helping the person that you're working with come to their own conclusions, figure out how they can like get to the next step or figure out what the end product should be and how to get there. It's not about you and your advice. That's a huge challenge that I see managers of all kinds, especially experienced managers, running into. And then sponsoring is feeling on the hook to get someone to the next level in their career by giving them stretch projects, visible opportunities, like those kind of like growth assignments.
I've heard you talk about or write about direction versus empowerment as a spectrum. Can you help us share that mental model?
Absolutely. So this is it's comical to me. Actually, in my workshops, I have everybody stand up and stand in a line. And if you imagine at one end of the spectrum, it's empowerment, and the other end of the spectrum, it's giving direction or being directive. We're all someplace by default on this line. So being empowering might be using those coaching questions, you know, helping someone introspect. Being directive might be mandating a desk move. You know, we all exist on this spectrum somewhere by default, and given a different circumstance or organizational structure or the people that you're working with or the urgency involved, you might kind of dance around different places in that spectrum. So I really encourage people to think about how they can use the full spectrum, because it's all useful. It's all necessary. And as good leaders, it's so important for us to not just know where we all are by default and where that's useful, but also when that's not as useful as maybe other places on the spectrum might be.
What are some heuristics you use to figure out where's the right place to be on that spectrum in a particular interaction?
But the first heuristic is, are you doing the same thing over and over again and not seeing the results that you want to see? I know this was my biggest mistake when I first started out as a manager, you know, trying to do the same approach that's worked on me, meaning the management that I wanted to receive, I tried to do that for my teammates. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't. And so doing the same thing over and over again is a pretty, it can work, right? But the heuristic is like, is this having the effect that I want it to have? That's probably the biggest heuristic I will talk about. The other little ones are like, are you getting blank stares? Are people avoiding doing some work? Are people fighting or playing devil's advocate? You know, there's all sorts of things that we can look for, but really it's the primary one is, are you having the intended consequences that you're hoping for?
I like that as a true north. If it's not working, maybe try another thing. And the blank stare is to make sure I'm following. Is that more someone needed more direction and you gave them empowerment so they don't know what to do with it? Is that kind of what a blank stare would look like?
Sometimes it could be the other direction too. Like you've just been trying the same thing and all of a sudden people are like staring through you or staring to the middle distance. So there's five forms of resistance that are common to us humans. And one of them is acting checked out, you know, just like kind of like glazing over, maybe showing up to a meeting, but not really participating in it or checking their email. Fighting is another one. Doubting, playing devil's advocate is another one. Bonding is a big one that I see, or people kind of like commiserate together. And then the last one is looking for an escape route. So just piecing out. If you see any of these five forms of resistance, probably it's time to change up your approach.
What does the bonding resistance look like?
So imagine like you've had a terrible day at work. Things have gone south for you. For me personally, when this has happened to me, I will either call up a friend or I'll find a coworker that I normally commiserate with, or I'll talk to my husband and be like, oh, you would not believe what happened today. So bonding is like verbally processing or expressing your feelings, what you're going through, the situation you're in with a group of people. Sometimes that's to feel validated. Other times it's just because you want to like get it all out with someone.
So I saw you have a example you write about with a desk move as a surprisingly emotional thing.
It's comical to me, right? Like something like this should be just so logical and pragmatic and not that big of a deal. I'm sure for many of your listeners, they were surprised the first time they had a desk move happen and they saw the emotions in response. So when we're talking about all of these things, the resistance, the forms of resistance, and when these surprising emotions come up, we're actually talking about our fight or flight response, which is common to many of us. Like there are some folks for whom their amygdala, their little threat data analysis maker isn't fully functioning. But for most of us, when our amygdala spots a threat in our environment, it'll go into fight or flight mode. And when it does, it tells our prefrontal cortex, which is our rational and logical, like problem-solving part of our brain, it tells it to go on standby because our amygdala is way faster than our PFC, our prefrontal cortex, is. So you can imagine when you see a bear heading towards you or there's an imminent desk move, your amygdala is going to wake up and maybe feel threatened. And in this case, we're going to display any of those five forms of resistance and really feel threatened by it. So desk moves is my favorite example of when our prefrontal cortex might go offline and our amygdala might, you know, flip out a little bit, and because it's just trying to keep us safe. So there's tons of things that I talk about in the book about how managers can navigate when they're seeing this threat response happen in the humans that they work with.
So what are some examples of folks hitting those five levels of resistance in response to a desk move?
So I like to walk through the desk move example using this acronym BICEPS, which was coined by Paloma Medina. So BICEPS stands for, the first one's belonging. When we feel like we're being othered or left behind or isolated, we don't understand how we belong to a group anymore, this core need's going to feel threatened. And when you think about it, you know, how evolutionary process-wise, access to groups, right? Belonging to a group kept us safe. It gave us access to the things that we needed. So it makes sense if we feel othered or left behind or isolated, our amygdala is going to feel a little bit threatened. So you can imagine in like a desk move example, if everyone is moving away from us, you know, or we're no longer near the people we used to sit next to, or a partner group, or next to our manager, we're going to potentially have some feelings, some forms of resistance, or amygdala might pop up and say hello. So that's the B. The I stands for improvement or progress. We all want to feel like we're making some sense of progress towards the things that matter to us. We're seeing some improvement in our daily lives. This could be for our projects or our team or our career, or our organization. So when things are stagnating or it feels like we're taking steps backwards, it's going to feel threatened. You can imagine that a desk move might feel like a distraction from the work that we're trying to have. Choice is the C in biceps. This is autonomy, right? We all want to have some amount of choice in our daily work lives. This is a funny one, though, because we need just the right amount of choice, too much choice, and our amygdala is going to get real stressed out, and too little choice, and we'll also feel really stressed out. So we all need a different amount of choice. Paloma, who coined biceps, she's the kind of person that needs like 99% choice. That would stress me out. I want like a solid 70 to 80% choice. We're all different. It's important to figure out what's true for you. The E stands for equality or fairness. We will all want to believe that everyone has equal access to what they need, equal access to resources, information. We want to believe that people are treated fairly. Predictability is the P. We all want to believe that things are going to happen in the future in the way that we expect them to. We all expect there to be change, but we kind of want to know when the change is going to happen. We want to know what the change is going to be. Just like choice, though, this is a funny one with like, you know, a balance. Too much predictability will also feel terrible. Like, I think we can all identify with the idea that like, if things are stagnant, if things aren't changing, that can feel really threatening. But of course, if it's constant surprises all the time, that will also feel threatening. And then the last one is significance, which is effectively status. Like, where am I in the hierarchy? Am I being, you know, assessed in a way that is reflective of where I am, how I'm progressing? Is it fair? You can see how these all kind of start to tie together. Like, any one stimulus can threaten any of the six core needs, and sometimes multiple. So as managers, we've got to be thinking about, of the people who are affected, of the people who are displaying resistance, which of these core needs might be going on for them? We're actually bad at guessing, by the way. So I encourage managers to use open questions, genuinely curious questions like, what's feeling sticky right now? Or what's important about this? Or what's hard about this? To kind of get at the core of which core need or core needs is going on for them. This is, honestly, I use this everywhere. I talk to a lot of parents who use this with their kids. My husband and I definitely, look, we'll get out the biceps core needs list and be like, I really need some more predictability right now. Or I really, you know, it feels like my equality of fairness core need is, I could use some more of that right now. It can be really handy.
So you're having one-on-ones, you ask open questions, and the goal there is to find on the biceps scale where the gap is, and that helps you kind of identify what to do next. So I'm going to try to list off the biceps for folks listening to get help with memory. So we got B is belonging, I is improvement, progress. C is control.
Close. It's choice, which often gives us a sense of control. Definitely.
Choice. And then we got E is, what was E?
Equality and fairness.
Equality, fairness. And then we got P is predictability, which I wanted to talk about predictability. I think there's a lot of lack of that going on right now. And S is going to status.
Yep. And significance. Yeah. You got it. Bingo. Well done.
We did it. So I love this core needs idea as a mental model to help folks who are maybe less intuitive about that. So right now, we have a lot of needs maybe not being met. This is, we're recording this in late March. There's a lot of uncertainty around COVID. Companies are in hiring freeze. So this feels like a place where management can do a lot. Okay, let's say that you're a manager at a company, you've just gone work from home, and you've got a one-on-one. How are you going to kind of structure that one-on-one to make the most progress for your team?
So if I'm a manager, I'm showing up on some video chat software with my direct report. The first thing I'm going to do is try to take a temperature check. Just how do they seem? Asking them can be really helpful. Sometimes we'll have the default response like, I'm fine. Like when you and I showed up on this call, I asked you how you were doing. You asked me how I'm doing. And my response was like, yeah, fine, which is going to be the short-winded version. You're going to get a lot of people saying this. Some of them may want to share more. Others may want to leave it there. And as managers, it's our responsibility to take that temperature check to see, is this an opportunity for them to unload or get some help? Or is this going to be healthier for them to kind of focus on work or just like, you know, get off of a call? If you can't tell, you can ask. Like when we hopped on this podcast, I said, hey, it's a weird time right now. You know, some folks that I'm talking to want to skip for a little bit till things are more certain. Some folks I'm talking to really want to chat right now. I'm cool either way. You can obviously do this with your direct reports up to a point. You know, there will be a point in which you either need something from them or need to make a backup plan or figure out how work is getting done. So you're going to have to find this line yourself. I know as a direct report, I've always appreciated it when my managers offered me choices rather than saying, what do you need? It's really hard to answer such an open-ended question, or worse, how can I help? You know, in this very trying and uncertain time, we don't know yet what kind of help we need. You know, just like give them some options. Say to them, it's cool to talk about it. Say to them, it's also cool to just skip it. You know, give them a very clear-cut set of like, here, ABC, here's what we can do today. Let's say you're in a position where it's urgent and you need to talk, or it's urgent and work needs to get done, or it's urgent and some changes need to happen. As a manager, you are setting the tone both in body language, in actual tone, and with your words. It's important to prepare for these one-on-ones with exactly what you want to say and exactly how you want to say it. So for example, eye contact over Zoom is really, really hard. It's important to not be like staring off the screen. Make sure that your camera is actually focused on you because they're going to be wanting to read you as much as you're trying to read them. Lean towards the camera a little bit. Don't get like up close and personal because that'll make them uncomfortable. Make sure you're feeling physically comfortable because that will change the energy in the room. And then make sure that whatever you're communicating is specific and actionable. For example, ABC project, you know, we're obviously, this is our top priority right now. I'm thinking about when it's going to ship. Notice I didn't say I'm concerned about or I'm worried about. I said, here's what's on my mind. I'm thinking about when it's going to ship. Here's the information I have, you know, A, B, C, D. This person's working on this thing. You're working on that thing. Then ask an open question. How are you feeling about it? What are you thinking about? What do you think we should do next? Basically leaving it a two-way street, but again, getting specific. Like, here's the topic that I want to focus on, and then asking a question. Here's how we can kind of talk about this together. So many of us as managers are also thinking about backup plans. It's okay to share. It's okay to share any specifics that you have and things that you're thinking about. But again, just make sure you're reading the room. Make sure you're not leaving it too open-ended.
So what I heard is start with a temperature check just to make sure and give someone the ability to talk about things or not talk about them. Give them a choice. Then you gave some advice for having a better conversation. Lean in, eye contact, and feeling comfortable. Could you tell me a little bit more about the feeling comfortable?
Yes, totally. So many of us are working from home for the first time. You may be at a weird kitchen table setup or standing in front of a windowsill. You may not be able to be physically comfortable because of the circumstances. You might have other people running around. You might be starving because you haven't had a chance to catch a break. It's okay to acknowledge these things. It's going to make the person on the other end acknowledge these things too. Recognize it's okay for it to not feel perfectly comfortable. But what I'm asking everybody to do is think about, how can I be as comfortable as physically possible before I hop on this one-on-one call, just to make sure that I'm giving off the energy and then creating the space necessary to have a real conversation with this person who's reporting to me.
A thing that I think some people are thinking about right now is layoffs. So some companies are freezing hiring, some companies are maybe impacted or not. And I know that's something that can be hard for ICs, especially the ones that haven't gone through it before, to ask about it. So if you're concerned about that in your organization, how do you, you know, structure that conversation?
It really depends on what you want to communicate. So my coaching question, because I am having this question, this talk a lot with people that I'm coaching right now. What I usually ask them is, what's the point you want to get across? Or what's the one thing you want to communicate to your team? You may want to communicate things are uncertain. You may want to communicate, I've got your back. You may want to communicate, I'm going to have more information next week. Don't worry about it for now. Just take a minute and figure out what's the one thing you want to communicate to your teammates and have that in mind. That's like your thesis statement for whatever topic it is. That will help you figure out how to structure the conversation, figure out how you want to focus it and tee it up. Once you have that in mind, it's important to figure out the facts. What's true? What do you know? What don't you know? When will you have more information? Those kinds of facts give us so much more predictability in terms of those biceps core needs. It gives people a little bit more freedom in making choices and understanding how much information they're going to be getting from you and how much they can lean on you going forward. Even if you don't know anything, it's very likely that your team is still thinking about layoffs. So it's going to be important to address, like, hey, here's a thing that's on my mind. I'm concerned that you're concerned, or I know that this is a topic that's on folks' minds right now. Here's what I know. And then just state those facts. Sometimes companies will have like a party line that they've given to managers to communicate out through their reports, talking points. I like to say, give those talking points. And then if there's still like uncertainty or some weird feelings, you're allowed to share your perspective. I like to say, okay, here's the party line. I usually won't say the party line, but I'll like, here's the party line. And then I'll say, here's what I think. So, hey, just so you know, the company is telling us no decisions are being made right now about layoffs. Here's what I'm doing with that information. I am thinking a lot about my teammates, caring about y'all deeply, and I want to make sure I'm supporting you because regardless of what, you know, we're all hearing, I want to make sure you know I'm here for you too. So you can see that's a company line, and then here's my input, or here's my spin, or here's my feelings about this thing. And then the third most important thing is saying, here's when you're going to hear from me next on this topic. Like, we will keep on checking in on this in the temperature check in one-on-ones. Or I'm going to keep on trying to get some more information. I'll talk about this at the next team meeting too, just so we make sure we're all on the same page as a team. So it's party line. Here's my point of view. Here's when you're going to hear from me next and in what medium.
How do you think about, there's one extreme, which is like, put all your fears on the line. Like, you know, there's a 20% chance that we'll have layoffs in the next 3 months based, you know, you could, and then the other is just party line. We're in a great fiscal position. You know, we're a leader of the industry. How do you think about framing those extremes?
I will always share the party line and acknowledge it as the thing that we are all hearing or as the thing that's being communicated to us first. I have found no value in ignoring it or trying to undermine it. From my perspective, the magic happens in what your point of view is when you share it. The magic is like, hey, here's what the company, which is not a person, is saying. And then here's what an actual person, me, is saying. People can smell it on you if you're lying. And people can smell it on you if things are weird. I can remember at one organization I worked in, there was one like full day leadership training. And I noticed that all of the VPs and above were leaving in the middle of it. And I was looking around at all of us who were left by the end of the day. And I'm like, it's just managers and directors. Where'd all the VPs and executives go? And I was like, something smells weird about this. And sure enough, a few weeks later, layoffs happened. I didn't know enough at the time to infer what was going to happen, but people can smell it when things are starting to go weird. So hiding it is not an option. Undermining the party line is not an option. Still, just give your point of view. Here's what I'm thinking about. Here's what I'm feeling. And then my pro tip is to go right back to those biceps core needs list. Like, hey, we don't have all the information. Let's talk about which of these core needs is most present for you right now. Which one is feeling most threatened or undernourished? Let's get creative about how to get this thing for you.
So we start with the party line. Then we come with our point of view, which we've decided in advance, and we've prepared the facts in advance that we're going to come into. And that might be here for you, or there's a lot of uncertainty, just acknowledging it. And the third piece was kind of the next step when we're going to touch in.
Yeah, when are you going to hear from me next? Yeah.
I love that framework. That seems really powerful.
And what medium? Because the people, I mean, I talked to so many people, especially individual contributors who are like, well, my manager said we'd hear from them again. It's been 3 weeks. Like, if you don't say when and how you're going to communicate again, your trust is going to start to diminish. Even if just checking and saying, hey, it's that time. I'm here in Slack. I got no new information. That maintains trust.
I want to talk about another mental model that I love of yours, which is the manager Voltron, which is a great term you coined. Could you tell us what the manager Voltron is?
And especially during these really uncertain times, I'm finding that this concept can be really, really helpful for folks. So the manager Voltron, I mean, did you watch Voltron?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you want to define for your audience what a Voltron is?
Oh, man. Okay. So a Voltron is a combination of other awesome things that become everything when they're combined. So
it's like, I think it was like lions, right? All came together and formed like a super robot, kind of like Captain Planet style, for those who are familiar with Captain Planet, you know? If you picture the group of people that you lean on as a Voltron, that means that each of those different people bring a different skill, superpower, point of view, level of experience, and it combined, they make this super manager, right? Because I don't know about you, but when I think about the managers in my past, they may be great at a particular thing, but they can't be great at everything. We're just one human, right? So it's important to have a group of people, a spectrum of people that you can lean on as you grow and as you develop, and not just one manager who's your be-all end-all to support you. So when I was thinking about this from the beginning, I started to think about the people who had a completely different leadership style and approach than I do. So when I was stumped on a problem, I would go to them and say, hey, I've got this problem. How would you approach it? And they would blow my mind with like things I would never do, but it like unlocked something for me. Or I needed coaching. You know, I'd turn to one of my friends who just was exceptional with their coaching skills, or could give me feedback, or could assign stretch projects for me, or could provide experience in a different industry. There's so many people that we can lean on and that we should add to our Voltron as we grow. I created a little, if you folks Google, we could add it to the show notes, Manager Voltron. You can find a little worksheet full. It's like a bingo card of like who in your world gives great feedback, is super politically savvy in your organization, sets really clear expectations, stuff like that, that we can kind of brainstorm who's already in your crew and who you should start adding to your crew.
So Manager Voltron is kind of your functional support network. What superpowers do they have? What superpowers do I need? And you know kind of who to go to. I think I kind of sidetracked us because I wanted to talk about this topic, but we were talking about how you take care of yourself in these times, uncertain times.
Honestly, you know, I think about what I need. So during this uncertain time, my number one core need that's going undernourished is predictability. For me, a lot of my work is in-person workshops. So it's all postponed somewhat indefinitely. It's really hard to find a sense of predictability. So in times like these, when I know that I've got this core need that I need to get sorted out because it's causing a lack of sleep, I'll turn to my Voltron. Some of them will give me feedback on what I can do and give me ideas. Some folks will just like give me time to do that bonding we talked about earlier, to kind of verbally process and sometimes commiserate. I lean on my Voltron to basically brainstorm new ideas for what to do right now, to kind of pivot some of my business model. So for me and for many folks, leaning on our Voltron during these times is really critical to have that resiliency, especially for folks who are in very senior leadership positions where you don't have a lot of people you can, you know, lean on and share what's really going on. When I was, you know, an executive, that group of people dwindled because there's only so much you can like share confidentiality with, you know? So it's really, really critical to think about your Voltron during these totally bananas and wild times.
Do you literally have something written down with your Voltron? Do you have a mental Rolodex or do you have this written down?
Actually, sitting right next to me, I have a list of bingo cards, basically. I've actually written in each of the names and I check in on it every 6 months to see who I should be adding to it.
What are some other things we could do to kind of take care of ourselves?
I think checking in with what that core need is going to be step zero, you know, because that's going to inform what else you need to do next in addition to relying on your Voltron. So for my husband, who's number one, I'm going to assume core need right now is belonging, based on the things that he's shared with me about what he's feeling during this time, not being able to hang out with our friends, not being able to see his folks, that core need of belonging, my assumption is it's probably the primary core need is feeling threatened. We're thinking creatively, what are some new ways we can like reinforce that sense of belonging? We're cocktail parties over Zoom. We're using Netflix party to schedule a movie night tonight with our friends. You know, some other ways we can try to kind of get creative about the next step. So really my suggestion to everybody who's listening is figure out what that core need is first. Lean on that Voltron to figure out how you can creatively kind of get that need soothed, get that need addressed. Everyone's going to be different.
to jive with your coaching style, do you mind listing what the biceps model was again? And we'll just stop talking for a second and let people listen.
So center yourself, think about like all of the things that are piling up in your brain right now. What's on your mind? What's feeling sticky? What's feeling impossible? What's keeping you up at night? Listen for which one of these might be the core thing. The B is for belonging. We want to understand how we relate to the group. We don't want to feel isolated or othered or left behind. The I stands for improvement or progress. We want to feel like we're making some sense of progress towards the future. We want to feel some improvement. When things feel stagnant, this can feel really threatening. The C is for choice. We want to have some level of choice and autonomy over our work, over our lives, over our daily experiences. Equality, fairness is the E. We want to believe that everybody's being treated fairly, has equal access to resources, to what they need. The P is for predictability, right? When everything feels like it's changing constantly, when we have very little certainty, this core need's going to feel threatened. And the last one is significance. So where are we in the hierarchy? Where are we, you know, when we think about power dynamics, when we think about being treated fairly and equitably too, you know, where do we have some sense of significance in this greater world or in our workplace?
And we'll just let everyone think for just a second about that. So let's talk about, so we know what our belonging is. Let's talk about our missing core need, not necessarily belonging. What about if we're managing managers? So other than having them listen to this podcast, what are some things we can do to help them in this time?
Give them the same framework to take into their one-on-ones. You know, do the check-in, get specific about options, have them develop that thesis statement, you know, what they want to communicate to their direct reports. Basically coach them to make sure that they are feeling equipped as they're managing other folks. It's likely, very, very likely that they've never done this before and they don't know what's right. The questions I get all the time from people who are not managers of managers are like, what if I mess this up? I don't know what other people are doing. I don't know what I should be doing. So model it with them and then walk them through your thought process. Coach them so they can come to their own conclusions about what they want to communicate. What's the point that they want to share with their people? My number one favorite coaching question, feel free to steal it during times like these, is what kind of leader do you want to be for your people right now? I'm hopeful that will be a good, juicy light bulb moment for someone.
What kind of leader do you want to be right now? That's a hard question. That's definitely a thinker. Yeah, I think I want to be a stable leader. I think that's the adjective that jumps to my mind, like in a time of uncertainty. I'm going to think about that one.
Can I do a really quick coaching with you?
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, great. So you said stable leader. What's the effect that you want to have on your teammates?
I would like them to feel like I'm doing the things that are necessary so that the team and the company is in a good place so they can worry about what's in their control and the things that are affecting them without having to worry about extra things of like, is Wes gonna screw this up? Are we gonna not make a decision that we need to make right now and we're gonna regret it in 3 months?
In order to do that, what support do you need?
So I've never been in this exact situation before. I was not a manager in the 07-08 crisis. So I think there's some just gaps I have in my Voltron about like, what should I do? What should I not do? How should I be thinking about how our customers will, what should we be doing differently for our customers? What should we be doing differently in sales? How should I be thinking about finance? So I think I have some knowledge gaps that I need to address. And I probably, I need emotional stability. So how do I help with that? That's a tough one. So I know what is not serving my emotional stability is spending an hour a day on Twitter. I know that does not help. Like 10 minutes a day, you know, I feel like, okay, got it. But that other however many minutes is not serving me. That does not help me be stable and focus on what I control. What are some other things that, like some tactics you've seen people help manage their own emotional stability in this kind of crazy time?
my number one favorite thing to do is as I'm listening during these kinds of coaching conversations, I will be thinking up homework. So in this case, the homework I would offer you, you always get to say yes, no, or give me a counter offer, is to not just set a limit, because that's the easy part. Like setting a limit on your Twitter consumption or news consumption is kind of easy. You can do that. But the actual homework, the challenge, is to create a list of 5 things that you can do instead. And then when you hit that 10 minutes, just hop over that list and pick one of those things.
I like it, so I don't have to do the hard thinking once the bell rings, which, because at that point, the easy thing to do is go back and, like, you know, work around the limit.
Right. What are you going to fill that time with instead? And you already listed it, right? Like, you've got some information. You've got some, like, some data you need to gather. You've got some certainty to collect. And so you've already got your list of 5 things, I think.
All right. So hold me accountable. I'm going to put my 5 things in the show notes. So I don't know if anyone else is having the Twitter problem, but I might not be the only one. Well, Laura, so there are people listening right now that are in uncertain times. They heard this coaching and they maybe want some more of that. Maybe they could use something like that. How could they get a hold of you?
I am so excited to as much as I can, try to support the folks that are out there with all of this uncertainty and try to help create a path forward for themselves. So wherewithal.com is the website for the coaching and training business that I run. We're actually offering a bunch of online workshops now, and also all of our coaching we do remotely. So hang out with us over a Zoom call somewhere sometime soon.
My guest today has been Laura Hogan. Laura, thank you for joining us today on Scaling Software Teams.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again to Laura for sharing her experience with us. Here are a couple takeaways I had from our chat. Number one, use your biceps to uncover resistance on your team. According to the biceps model, there are 5 core needs. If we identify which of those 5 core needs is being violated, we can learn how to connect and help our team. The 5 forms in the biceps model are B, belonging; I, improvement or progress; C, choice; E, equality or fairness; P, predictability; and S, significance. We also cover why some things are more emotional than we might otherwise guess and how to help our team manage through them. Specifically, we talk through desk moves. Then we use that biceps framework to uncover resistance and help our team work through it. Number 2, effective framing is crucial for hard conversations. Laura shares her frame when having a difficult conversation with the team. Specifically, let's imagine you were carrying out an announcement that you didn't decide. It came from the top. Her framework is the party line, then my point of view, and then here's when we're going to follow up and talk about this next, the context and the time. Number 3, the best managers are actually Voltrons. Voltrons is an old cartoon where several smaller robots turn into a giant super robot that can really kick some butt. Our manager Voltron is a collection of mentors we have around us that give us new capabilities. These are folks that have superpowers and experience and perspectives that we need to be an awesome manager. Laura advocates specifically collecting these folks, writing their names down, and thinking of them when we have problems. These are folks that we can email them, and they can help us, and they can give us extra perspective. Thanks again to Laura for coming on the show. Now, I want to hear from you. If you have any questions about growing a remote team, please email me at wes@woventeams.com. I read every email personally, and I'm excited to help you solve your problems. Until next week, let's keep on scaling.